have them show floors around the world.
Richard Gavel.
Why do you look at you when he gavels?
Peter, do you know if we have a, do we have a lead?
Senator Monroe, we
Senator
started
Monroe,
the
we're actually in the hearing. We're actually in the hearing.
Oh, we're in there now?
Yes.
That was that sound you heard next to you.
I'll open the hearing for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for May 16th, 2017. I believe this is our ninth public hearing. And we just finished one, remote one to Coos Bay, and now we're going to be hearing from people from Ontario. I will be talking shortly about the guidelines for this hearing, but before we start, I want to make sure a couple of things. One, can you hear us? Will people raise their hands if they can hear us? Good. And then we will just start, we'll introduce each one of the members here just shortly so that you know who is up here at the dais. We'll start with Representative Stark.
Mm-hmm. Representative Stark will be with us in a moment, Mr. Chair, but I'm State Representative David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon coast. I live near Lincoln City.
I was trying to stall for Representative
Smith-Warner. Well done, Representative. Hi, Representative Barbara Smith-Warner from Northeast Portland.
Dwayne Stark, House District 4 in Southern Oregon.
Paul Holvey, State Representative, District 8, South Eugene, Fern Ridge, Lorain, Notai.
John Huffman, State Rep, House District 59. I live in the Dalles.
Hi, everyone. Jennifer Williamson, State Representative, House District 36, Northwest, Downtown, and Southwest Portland, and I am the House Majority Leader.
Dan Rayfield, State Representative, House District 16, Corvallis, Philomath, Oregon State University.
I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from District 13 in Eugene.
I'm Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator from the Salem, Jervis, Woodburn area.
Chuck Thompson, state senator. I live in Hood River, and I also represent parts of Clackamas and Multnomah counties.
Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, parts of the coast from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and then over into the valley at Sheridan and Fall City.
James Manning, Senate District 7, which is Eugene and Junction City.
Alan DeBoer, Senate District 3, which is Ashland, Medford, Talent, Phoenix, and Jacksonville.
I'm Rod Monroe, District 24, Mid-Multnomah County, and portions of Northern Clackamas County.
I'm Senator Richard Devlin. I represent the people in Lake Oswego, West Lynn, Tualatin, and Lower Southwest Portland. And now to the people in Ontario, if you could give us an idea, we'll just get started here in a few minutes, but how many of you are here to, if you raise your hand, to testify about human services, education, public safety, natural resources, or any other topic? Okay. This hearing will last approximately an hour. If you have written testimony, there should be someone there that can receive it from you. If you're called up to speak, and this is a little bit different than our normal hearings because there aren't as many people here, but when you come up, please just start speaking, and we'll just go on to the next person when that person's time is up. Stay at the table until each person at the table has completed their testimony, depending upon how many people are at the table. We will take testimony for 2 minutes for each person that's there. I know that doesn't sound like a long time, but it actually is quite a long time in terms of what you can actually say in 2 minutes. We don't have our regular timer today, but we will have a timer that actually will beep when you get to 2 minutes. When your 2 minutes time is up, I will actually go to the next person. We'd ask that there be no applause because that will just take away time from other people that are there to testify. Because this is a public hearing, we will not be actually asking you questions, nor will be answering questions from you. If you want to submit written testimony by mail, you can actually send it in to Ways and Means Budget at OregonLegislature.gov, and I believe perhaps the coordinator there give you that address again if you need it. What I'd like to do now, if the coordinator can come forward so we can test the microphone, and so if the coordinator there could tell us how many people have signed up to testify.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
There are approximately 17 to testify.
Okay, thank you very much. And if the first person will come forward. And please remember to identify yourself for the record.
One more up at the table.
And you'll have to get very close to the microphone.
You should be able to speak up to where you are and be just fine, okay? So, Chairs Devlin, Nathanson, and members of the committee, I'm Bill Johnson. I'm a founding member of Malaga County Poverty and Prosperity, and I'm also a trustee at Eastern Oregon University. Thanks much, Bill. Thank you for being the time to travel across the state, both physically and virtually. Glad to have you here, going through the book times. I'm here to testify on behalf of House Bill 2012 and also talk about public university support funds. House Bill 2012 is a remarkable bill. It's co-sponsored by Representatives Bence and Speaker Kochem. We still work together to create an innovative, specific bill that can help address many of the issues we have here in Mountain County. It creates an Eastern Oregon border fund and a mechanism to manage that fund to address the issues we have as we integrate our north versus state of Idaho. I think the first issue for you is to think about centralization versus decentralization of state services. And Oregon's been a leader when you think about things like CCOs and how we do this regionally. And this is an opportunity for a different kind of mechanism that allows us locally to understand how we can some of the thoughts we have if we deal with this state board with a very conservative government. I also need to take a moment to talk about the Public University Support Fund and my role as a trustee of Eastern Oregon University. I regularly work towards managing tuition increases that the university begin to stake their positions for the coming season. I think it's unacceptable to see 10% tuition increases in Oregon, and I've regularly lobbied for 0% increases in EOU. That's hard to do as we look at the incredible increases we're seeing in our employment costs. And so we're going to bust for $100 million increase in that amount, and it appears that there's some pressure against that number. I'd certainly encourage the raising this committee to help us understand how to balance tuition increases.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your time.
Before the next person starts, there is a lot of noise in the background there, so I think the mic is picking up a lot. So please keep that in mind. Please begin.
All right. So, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, my name is Cesar Nevaquez, and I am an Eastern Oregon University student. I'm here to talk a little bit about the University Public Fund. And I'll start with a little story that I have here. My dad used to tell us stories, especially to me, why he and my mom were the way they did. Stories about their decision to move to the United States and their constant struggle to provide resources for my upbringing and education. Those stories taught me to value higher learning and never take it for granted. When my parents left Guanajuato, Mexico, they knew exactly what they wanted for their family, an education. That is why I'm here today. Without the multitude of opportunities that higher education has offered me, I wouldn't be talking here tonight. It's been a long journey, and the university system has really helped me develop professionally and in many ways that I never imagined. I graduated from Freeland High School in 2013. I then moved to, that's why I'm here today also, here at Treasure Valley Community College. I went there 2 years, graduated in 2015. I was then able to transfer to Eastern Oregon University, and I will be graduating with a Bachelor's of Arts degree with minors in Spanish, English, speakers of other languages, and physical education. Along with that, I will continue my education with my master's in education. It reminds me that I would still be, if any of these opportunities weren't available for me, I would still be feeding cattle at 4 a.m., thinning irrigation ditches, and fixing barbed wire fences, working 2 to 3 jobs just to make ends meet. So I'm here to talk about the higher education and how fundamental it is to my success. I want to make sure that future generations have that same opportunity, the opportunity to learn and expand on their dreams of garnering a degree and continue to do great things. Will you support county universities at $765 million and community colleges at $634 million?
Thank you.
I love that your school increases below 5%.
Thank you. Please begin.
Co-chairs and members of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, thank you for including Mauger County in your list of public hearings. My name is Dan Joyce, County Judge, Mauger County, live in Vail, Oregon. The decisions the Oregon Legislature makes are critical to Mauger County. More than any other county in Oregon, Mauger County feels the immediate effects from your conversations regarding policy, revenue, and spending as we border the state of Idaho. This is why Mauger County is glad to hear of the introduction of the House Bill 2012, which is sponsored by Representative Cliff Benz and Speaker Tina Kotek. We would encourage the committee to fully fund the legislation. The bill recognizes the uniqueness of Mauger County geographically and will help us address the challenges we face as we compete with the Idaho for jobs, business, and livability. Another budget item Mauger County would support is the passage of a transportation package. We've been looking to develop a reload facility to assist local growers and packers here in Treasure Valley. This project would assist our local egg-based economy, which is world-renowned for our onion production. The reload facility is a concept being discussed in the package as well as county road funding. While these might be items in a specific agency budget, we ask for committee support because they will have an impact on the state's overall budget. In terms of the state budget, from a county perspective, we'd encourage the state to consider their agreements with counties when prioritizing their budgets for the upcoming biennium. Many programs delivered at the county level are state county services. We would like the state to continue with these agreements. They include programs in health, human services, public safety, and transportation. Another cost driver that both the county and our local district and state are seeing is PERS. We encourage the legislature to look at possible solutions to help reduce stress on local government, stabilize the growing cost increases. The unpredictability of significant increases each year are limiting our capacity to address other budget drivers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, if the next group will come forward.
Reminds me of me. I'm sitting here way up on this side.
We have to move the table.
Please begin whenever you're ready.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Peter Lawson. I'm with Oregon Food Bank Southeast Oregon Services, which is a branch of Oregon Food Bank based in Ontario, Oregon. We provide emergency and supplemental food resources to more than 30 agencies and programs throughout Malheur and Hardy counties and across many of the communities hardest hit by recent weather conditions. While some across the nation refer to economic recovery, I can tell you that we know families across this region are still struggling to put meals on the table. Tonight, as a member of the Oregon Food Bank Network, I'm asking you to invest $4 million in the Oregon Hunger Response Fund in the 2017-19 Department of Human Services budget. This important fund helps Oregon's 20 regional food banks acquire and distribute food to over 950 local agencies across Oregon, helping families during times of economic hardship and communities struck by natural disasters like the ones this community has experienced. For us in particular, Oregon Food Bank Southeast Oregon Services, our portion of this resource in combination with public and private partnerships means that we are able to sustain localized food recovery efforts, that we are able to maintain distance deliveries to remote rural areas like Jordan Valley, which is 180 miles round trip from Ontario, and Burns, 260 miles round trip, as well as places like Ontario, Nyssa, Vail, Harper, Crane, Druzy, and Gentura, impacting access for nearly 4,000 hungry rural Oregonians across our service area in this region. We thank you very much for your time and for your consideration.
Thank you. Please begin.
My name is Mara Slinker. I'm a client of the SCDC in Ontario. Although our business, Kitty and Kill True Value Hardware, has been around since 1926, our family has owned it for the last 53 years. During this time, we have seen many changes in the industry, as well as our community, and have used the Small Business Development Center here at TVCC to help us not only maintain our business, but to compete overall. My brother and I have grown up in our business, but we both moved away and pursued other employment before coming back to Ontario. I have a degree in business and my brother in art. I, however, have not used it for several years and need to renew my skills and develop new ones in areas such as accounting, inventory, and overall management. And my brother needs to learn all of them. Our business has been known to have many unique items, but it has been a business that has truly invested in our community and our needs. When Snake River Correctional Prison came in to look for community members that would be able to supply them with some of their products they needed to run the prison from day to day. At the time, we met with the Small Business Development Center, and it helped us fill out the long paperwork to sign for the state certification to make this happen. Recently, I've met with them and even pushed us farther. We are now federally certified through the GCAP program, and it has allowed me to successfully compete in the government marketplace and grow our business. Throughout this process, they've helped me set up hub zone certification so that we can be found as a contact and can bid on numerous projects. It has also helped me fill out the SAM paperwork, which took 2.5 hours and was very tedious. Recently, the BLM was needing a large supply of plastic sheeting during a fire. We were able to supply them. We were also able to supply our local prison during the recent snowstorm when we got 48 inches of snow. Our store now works day to day with these divisions and have made a great business relationship with them. We've gone from one division to three divisions at our local prison, including the physical plant, a building plant, and a sign shop where they make four signs for the BLM. We couldn't have done it without the SBDC.
Thank you very much. Next person, please.
Chairman Devlin and Madam Chair Nathanson and esteemed members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Ray Lamar. I'm the Chief Operations Officer for Lifeways Incorporated. We're a not-for-profit community mental health service provider in Umatilla and Mount Hare counties. Our service areas include approximately 100,000 Oregonians, and we are the largest behavioral health service provider in Eastern Oregon. We are members of Greater Oregon Behavioral Health Service Area and Eastern Oregon Coordinated Care Organization. During calendar year 2014, we served about 7,200 individuals and families, and in calendar year 2016, we served 9,122 individuals, or almost 2,000 more, as a result of the investments made by the state and the Oregon Health Authority. We want to express our deep appreciation for these new investments. A review of the co-chair's existing resources framework shows the stark realities of our present resources. I commend you for your thoughtfulness and targeted reductions versus across-the-board reductions in preparation for this starting framework document. These choices come at a particularly tough time with the maturing of our CCOs and our increased understanding and investment in integrated care. In addition to the guiding principles that were used to develop this framework, the following are suggested to consider as you finalize the next biennial budget relative to human services and behavioral health. Number one, investments in early intervention, prevention, community-based treatments over institutional care are key to behavioral health outcomes. Number two, adjunct to local law enforcement, child welfare, and hospitals, community mental health providers are safety net providers with 24-hour crisis, suicide prevention, and voluntary treatment services. CMHPs provide increased community safety and benefits when compared to other providers who deliver only non-emergent psychiatric services.
Thank you very much. If the next group would please come forward. And please begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Honorable member of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Grant Kittermer of Ontario, Oregon. I have an onion packing and shipping business in Ontario. Onions is the major revenue-producing crop in Mather County, generating approximately $70 million annually for FOB sales. I'm here to address Senate Bill 805. Several years ago, I served on a committee that helped create and pass a local service district to help fund the operations of the Mather Experiment Station and the Mather Extension Service. I'm here to express my concern about proposed flat funding for 2017-18 or 19 of the OSU statewide public service programs. I understand that the OSU trustees have requested $128 million, which is a $9.4 million increase over the prior budget, which works out to about 4% annualized increase. They have done so to provide a continued level of service for the public programs. The recommended budget for to flat fund the programs would result in physician attrition at the Mount Hare Experiment Station and or at the Mount Hare Extension Service. Mount Hare County is the poorest county in the state of Oregon, but yet our citizens stepped up to support these two programs with the service district. We understand the importance of these services. They're indispensable. We heavily rely on the research at the experiment station and the delivery of information by the extension agents to maintain our competitiveness in the onion production sector. As a businessman, I realize the importance of continued funding for programs in my business, such as marketing, promotion, food safety, training, and equipment repairs and maintenance. If any of these programs were to be discontinued, the results would be terrible. Much of the value in the past investments and efforts would be lost very quickly. I think this would be the same thing with our services here. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Honorable members of the Ways and Means Committee, I'm Paul Skeen. I am the president of the Mallier County Onion Growers Association. And what Brent just told you is really true. The budget that the governor has proposed, that 118.5, needs to go to 127.9 is what it needs to be. But let me talk to you about what saved this valley and onion industry a couple of years ago. We've long relied on the local OSU research and extension programs to improve our farming practices and make Mallard County the largest onion producing county in the United States. Recently, the very existence of our industry was threatened by proposed regulations brought on by the Food Safety Modernization Act. That would have curtailed our ability to irrigate our crops with water from our irrigation canals. Fortunately, the Mallier Experiment Station and the Mallier County Extension immediately started research projects that have demonstrated the safety for our onions and production practices and led the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to develop more appropriate and economical sustainable regulations that do not sacrifice the food safety of our onion industry. This is just one example of how OSU statewide programs have benefited our community. Agriculture is the lifeblood of our county, and it succeeds, and its success depends on the vital services provided by our OSU scientists and extension faculty. If anything, we consider the estimates of a $10 return on each dollar that's invested with the OSU statewide programs to be a gross underestimation. Thank you for your time. We urge you to support SB 805, and we will keep the current level of services at OSU and keep us alive and growing here in Mallard County. Thank you very much.
Next, please.
Honorable co-chairs and members of the Ways and Means Committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Bob Simmerly. I am an agronomist for McCain Foods, which is a large food processing company that procures a great deal of onions from Mallard County. I'm also a farm owner here in Mallard County. And I'm also rising to request that you increase support for research and extension in the state. About 15 years ago, our crop was under tremendous threat from a new disease called iris yellow spot virus. And it was research and extension that came forward and implemented an integrated pest management strategy that has, even though the disease is still present, it has been controlled, and we're very grateful for that. Now we're facing another new disease, which is Fusarium proliferatum, a bulb-rot disease that is threatening the crop. And these problems occur over and over and over again over the years in every research and extension center around the state. We must have a well-funded, well-staffed research and extension system in the state in order to protect not just the businesses that rely on agriculture, but the very food supply. Research and extension is not a special interest for farmers or for agribusiness. Everybody who eats has an interest in research and extension. So I ask that you increase the governor's request according to the trustees' recommendation and keep the funding strong for agricultural research and extension in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll wait for the next group to get seated. Please begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, committee members of the Means and Ways Committee. My name is Jensen Kemble. I'm a senior at Ontario High School here in Ontario, Oregon. And I am part of the FFA organization here to talk about the Senate Bill 230 and House Bill 2382. In the FFA, I have learned skills that I'm going to take with me for the rest of my life. Whether it be speaking skills, you'd be hard-pressed to find me in front of a classroom 3 years ago, let alone testifying in front of a committee of Congress. And now I'm able to do that because of the FFA and because of the skills that it has taught me. I also have friends who have learned through the FFA what their career field should be, as well as mine. I figured out what I want to go into and study within agriculture after I graduated from high school. And I know friends who have gotten their welding certification, as well as finding their culinary passion through the FFA organization. This is an organization that affects the lives of thousands of kids across the United States and across Oregon. And I strongly believe that you'd be hard-pressed to find another student-led organization that produces as many productive citizens as the Oregon FFA does. And so for that reason, I strongly encourage you to support House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Ruth Blazard. I am a former FFA member, a mother, and a certified agriculture instructor. And I also am speaking in favor of Senate Bill 230 and House Bill 2382. The FFA is the force of the agriculture education model that makes it so powerful. It teaches life lessons that transcend classroom walls. Students cannot get this education any other way than with the leadership and hands-on experience it provides. We have all heard the old Chinese proverb, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, and teach a man to fish and feed him for a lifetime. This is exactly what the FFA does for the high school students it teaches. It gives them lifelong skills that will contribute to strong schools, strong families, and strong communities. My experience in the FFA, which were most often experienced outside of class time, included competing in contests that taught skills such as speech writing, public speaking, sales presentations, resume development, job interview skills, proper practice of how to conduct a meeting through parliamentary procedure, and the ability to critically read and formulate opinions on current issues. Along with each of these contests, principles of hard work, responsibility, integrity, and teamwork were learned. FFA also has a strong leadership backbone that provides the framework necessary to learn leadership aptitudes. My experience is just one of thousands of individuals who are touched and taught by agriculture education and FFA each year. My peers who are once FFA members can attest to the skills FFA taught them and health benefits their careers today. Even one who's a physical therapist says she uses those skills every day, even though it's not agriculturally related. I could continue on for each, and for each FFA member, their experience is unique, but all would say it is positive and enriching. Our youth need this now more than ever, and with the trends of society today especially. We need to provide youth with experiences that allow them to develop and practice leadership skills, learn hard work and commitment, be encouraged in making positive connections with others, and prepare to be the leaders of tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please begin.
Hi, my name is Kane Roper, and thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share how important education is to me. I'm a first-year student here at Treasure Valley Community College, and I am concerned that the cost of college is increasing so much that future students might not be able to afford it. We are the future doctors, lawyers, engineers, nurses, and politicians, and some of us are already mothers and fathers. We are responsible for lives besides our own. Continuing to add to our tuition costs will force some students to prioritize food, clothing, and shelter over education, and they'll no longer be able to attend classes. Treasure Valley Community College, like all colleges in Oregon, is incredibly important to this community. As a student, I watched the college struggle to find enough money for things like snow removal, security upgrades, and software. The education I am receiving is a good one, but sometimes support services are lacking because there just isn't enough money. Tuition is used to cover about a third of the total costs of a community college education, but the cost of students has steadily increased over the years. More tuition increases will put a community college education out of reach for many students. I'd like to encourage you to fully fund community colleges in the upcoming budget. TVCC is already looking to increase tuition for the next year, and without $634 million, we'll see more budget and service cuts at the school. Please do what you can to keep college affordable and accessible for the people of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, if the next panel will come forward. Please begin whenever you're ready.
Greetings, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Alex Cata with Eastern Oregon University. Today I'm here to deliver some remarks from Ben Brunswick, an EOU alum, Abby Beeflick. She extends her greetings to the members of the committee and says, My name is Abby Beeflick. I am the most recent former student body president of the EOU, a title I'm proud to be able to hold during my time there, as well as have attached to my resume for the rest of my life. As ASDOU president, I had the immense honor of representing EOU at the university community meetings on campus, providing a personal tour of EOU's grounds to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, testifying at a HEC meeting, and testifying on behalf of the importance of higher education funding at the state level. I feel it would be key to highlight the many ways in which college changed my life now that I'm on the other side of graduation. I'm one of few students who can say they received their diploma debt-free, and I have the comparatively affordable cost of EOU scholarships, financial aid, and my parents to thank for that. However, many students across our state do not have the same circumstances or opportunities. I mention this because the financial burden placed upon students does not end after graduation, even when college in itself does. My situation allowed me to aim for a postgraduate degree, which would simply be impossible if otherwise. I am very fortunate to say that my experiences, my resume, and my financial status are making the dream of attending law school at the U of O a reality, and I will be joining the class of 2020 this fall. The bonds and benefits of my undergraduate career continue to pan out in my everyday life. This was truly the pinnacle of my academic pursuit. Ms. Beeflake's story mirrors the experience of thousands of EOU alumni, experiences that are threatened by the specter of low education funding. In order to provide a college education to thousands more students at EOU, and prevent a tuition increase greater than 5%, I ask that you fund public universities $765 million during the next biennium. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Logan Skeen. I'm a young farmer located in Nissa, Oregon. I now have four full seasons under my belt, all of which have brought different experiences and different challenges. And that is what I'm here to speak about today is the SB 805. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the Oregon State Mountain Deer Experiment Station and the important role that it serves for farmers here in our area. The different challenges, as was mentioned earlier, we have the Irish yellow spot virus that showed up in the 80s, and we have nut sedge, which has threatened our crops. These are things that the experiment station continues to do studies on to this day, and yet there are new ones arising with the demands on the water for checking for E. coli and the new arising of Fusarium flagellatum, as was mentioned. All these studies still need to continue to be conducted so we can continue to improve our practices. Today I was meeting with the chairman of the research committee, and he was discussing with me that the study for nut sedge, which continues to be a problem and is very damaging to an onion crop, The cost of that, just from last year to this year, has increased by $4,000. Not because they're doing anything different, just because costs are increasing year to year. All these studies still need to be done, and yet we are facing new ones. So it is my recommendation and that the funding be allotted, the increase that has been requested. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Rebecca Cuevas. I am a senior at Eastern Oregon University, and I attend classes at the center in Ontario, housed at TVCC, Treasure Island Community College. I am here to urge you to continue to fund higher education to hopefully give more than $100 million to public universities. I am from Mesa, Oregon, Niagara County. I have lived here all my life, and tuition increases every year just about, and we would like to prevent more than 5% increase. I am a part of the teaching program called Quest Program through Eastern Oregon University, and numbers is the name of the game, and I understand that. And I'd like you to think about the following numbers that I'm going to give you. A typical cohort here at the Ontario Eastern Oregon Center is 23 for the teaching program. This year, my cohort is 10. The local school district, our biggest local school district, emergency certified 14 teachers, meaning we are lacking teachers at a significant amount. So, $100 million is the minimal amount that we need for our public universities. Please consider more than that. I am like most of our students. I come from parents who did not receive an education. I remember my dad working the night shift at the Alameda Sugar Factory to come home, take a shower, eat breakfast, and go work some pot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Next. Somebody else?
Good evening, my name is Roberto Gamboa. I'm here to speak about the Senate Bill 558. I've been doing a lot of community work here in this area between the three towns, Ontario, Nissa, and Bell. Particularly involving this type of bill, I work with our healthy program, and we've been registering children with our local Treasure Valley clinics, Treasure Valley Family Clinics, for pre-dental, vision, behavioral, mental, physical, assessments, and it's been a couple weeks since I've been involved in it, and I've seen quite the increase in people coming forth to ask us for these services. Now, this service would be non-existent if we were able to pass a bill like this where everybody under the age of 19, regardless of their status here in our country, would be allowed, medical services. Studies do show that children that have the access to this type of health care result in improved education, higher income further on in life, which allows them to provide their own health care. So, I'm here tonight to ask you guys to take this into consideration and really help this bill pass on, because it'd be really great for the state for all our children to be able to have access to health care, regardless if they're, able to afford it or not. It should be a great thing to be able to see all our children healthy and be productive in our community, state, and, in our country. Thank you guys for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you for allowing us this time to voice our thoughts and our concerns. My name is Mirta Diaz, and I am an EUU student as well, and I attend the teaching program on my senior year. I'm a non-traditional student. I have two teen boys already attending high school. It's taken me so long to actually come to school and just take it off full time. A lot of it having to do with financial issues. As a single mom, it's been a long road. This is my first year
where I tried financial aid, scholarships, and all kinds of things in order to make this year affordable and actually leave my job, which took me a long time to decide on, just going full-time and leaving my job. Our concern right now is it's not only us students, right, maybe I'll be graduating in a few months, but my children, as I said, they're in high school already. My oldest one will be starting to apply within a year. He's a junior in high school now. So keeping college affordable is not just important for me as a single mom, but also for my children who I know I want them in college. If it's this important for me to come back to college at 38 years old, I know it is important for me to have my children go to school, you know, be able to afford a good university as well. So I'm here to ask you to although I believe that there shouldn't be any increase in our tuition, but I'm here to ask you for your support for the $100 million to keep tuition under 5%. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Can I speak to the coordinator there?
Yes, sir.
Is there anyone else signed up?
I think we're done. There are a couple more names on the list, but they're not speaking, so.
Okay, well, thank you very much for assisting us there, and we'd like to thank the staff here that made these hearings possible, and thank the people that testified and the people remaining in the room. That will conclude our hearing for this evening, and have a good evening.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.